text that was read for us this morning. We look at and learn from it the institution and the things regarding the supper of our Lord, the remembrance that we have of Him and of what He has done for us. And it is the beginning of a series of events that lead to what we commonly refer to as the gospel story. Once again, Brother David did not know, but his songs go well with the lesson. Two of the songs mentioning the death of our Savior and the importance that it has in our life and how we depend upon it. And then the song just before the lesson about the gospel, which the Apostle Paul describes to the Corinthian brethren as being the message of Christ and Him crucified and buried and rising again. This morning's lesson, I want to look at the beginnings of that. I had intentions of going all the way from the arrest through to the ascension, but I wanted to do this in a manner that we included all of the things that are found in all four of the Gospels, and it takes a lot longer to combine all of those accounts into one reading than you would think it would. And I can't start with this, but I will say at this point, I would encourage you sometime over a course of days or weeks or whatever to take the time to put together the gospel account, especially the gospel accounts of the betrayal, the arrest, the crucifixion, the trial, those things. Because not only will it refresh your mind, but they tell us that working with that text, in fact, some go so far as to say writing it down for yourself, will allow you to hold it longer in your memory, allow you to keep it closer. And we need to fill our minds with the message of the gospel, which is the story of Jesus Christ and His death, burial, and His resurrection. Much of this morning's reading, or this morning's lesson, is going to be a reading from the compilation of the four gospel accounts, but it begins there with Jesus and His apostles together, all 12 gathered together there for that final supper on the beginning of the feast. And as you read and you understand the things that are talked about, you understand there are certain requirements regarding that feast and are involved, and we use that in talking about the Lord's Supper and preparing ourselves for it. But more focus for us today is this supper that we'll partake here in just a short while is a reminder of the things we read in the final chapters of the four Gospels, the story of Jesus. And the Scripture tells us that after they had partaken of this supper, Jesus had given them instruction, talked to them at this time, and instituted what we refer to as the Lord's Supper. Said after singing a hymn, He went forth with His disciples and proceeded, was as was His custom, over the ravine of Kidron to the Mount of Olives, where there was a garden, which He entered with His disciples. When He arrived at the place called Gethsemane, He said to His disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray. Pray that you may not enter into temptation." He took with Him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, James and John, and being grieved, very distressed and troubled, He said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with Me." And He withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and fell on His face to the ground and began to pray that if it were possible, the hour might pass Him by, saying, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for You. If You are willing, let this cup pass from Me, yet not what I will, but what You will be done." An angel from heaven appeared to Him, strengthening Him, and being in agony, He was praying very fervently. His sweat became like drops of blood falling down upon the ground. And He came to the disciples and found them sleeping. He said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep? Could you men not keep watch with Me for 1 hour? Keep watch and praying that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Jesus left the main group of the disciples at the opening of the garden, it seems, and He and those three that were closest to Him went a little further in, and then He left them there to watch while He went and spoke to the Lord. He separated himself from his apostles because of the grievousness of the plea with which he was going to speak to the Father. But he left those three to watch for him. And they fell asleep. Now, of course, when we look and consider the events of the past week, and especially that day, it was on into the darkness. In fact, depending on exactly what account you read from in regards to the commentaries and such, it could have already been midnight or close thereunto at the time these things were taking place. And I know a lot of us get real sleepy after the darkness comes. It's hard to stay awake. But Jesus pleads with his apostles, could you not have waited and watched for an hour? He went again away the second time and prayed, saying, My Father, if this cannot pass away, yet unless I drink it, your will be done. And he came and found them again sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to answer them. And he left them again and went away and prayed the third time, saying the same thing once more. Then he came to the disciples the third time and said to them, Are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand. Now, we have nothing to tell us how long it was between the times that Jesus spoke to his disciples and he came back to them. We don't know how long his prayer was to God. We know what the message of his prayer was. We know the urgency that it had in his mind and in his focus. And we know that his point was both to seek strength and comfort and to express that what he's doing is not what he as a human would want to do, but he's doing what God has assigned for him to do. There's a great example for us there. In the extreme sorrow and anguish that Jesus was in, even though he knew what he was going to have to suffer, and it was not what he would desire as a man, because he was the Son of God, he was willing to endure it. We need to learn from that example. I'm convinced that not a one of us will ever be faced with the same situation that Jesus found himself in. Though we may be killed for our faith, it won't be because of the sin of someone else, that they might be free. Will we be able to withstand the tests that are placed upon us? Would we be willing, even though it is completely against our will, to submit and do what God asks us to do? Continue, now Judas was betraying him. Having received the Roman cohort and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees knew of the place, for Jesus had often met there with his disciples. While Jesus was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, came up accompanied by a large crowd with lanterns and torches, swords and clubs from the chief priests and scribes and elders of the people. So Jesus, knowing all the things that were coming upon him, went forth and said to him, Whom do you seek? They answered him, Jesus, the Nazarene. And he said to them, I'm he. Judas was also, who was betraying him, standing with them. And when he said to them, I am he, they drew back and fell to the ground. Therefore he asked them again, Whom do you seek? And they said, Jesus, the Nazarene. Jesus answered, I told you that I am he, so if you seek me, let these go their way to fulfill the word which he spoke. Of those whom you have given me, I have lost not one. Now he who was betraying him had given them a signal, saying, Whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him and lead him away under guard. And he approached Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? After coming, Judas went to him, saying, Hail, Rabbi, and kissed him. Jesus said, Friend, do what you have come for. And they laid hands on Jesus and seized him. Once again, we see an example of Jesus knowing what was coming, knowing his fate, still submitted himself to the will of God, to the betrayal of one of his chosen ones, who he had taught, whom he had chosen himself at some time a few years before. He submitted to the will of the Lord. Those who were around him saw what was going on. They said, "Lord, shall we strike with a sword?" In fact, Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's slave and cut off his right ear. The slave's name was Malchus. But Jesus answered and said to Peter, "Stop! No more of this." And he touched his ear and healed him. "Put the sword into the sheath, and the cup which the Father has given me, shall I not drink it? Or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? How then will the Scriptures be fulfilled, which say that it must happen this way?" Two different attitudes shown. Peter, when he sees what's going on, retaliates. Jumps out and strikes back. Jesus humbly submits. Why? Maybe because Jesus saw the end result. Maybe because Jesus was focused on the purpose of what was going on. And Peter was reacting to events. Time and time again, as we look at the Apostle Peter and the things that take place in the life that we have recorded from him, whether it be in the presence of Jesus as he was here or at other times, Peter seems to be reactionary. His first response is to retaliate or to strike back. And Jesus' message is no. Put your sword up. If there was a need to retaliate, I can call on God. But that's not our purpose here. I think there's a lesson for us in life today. Our purpose is not to retaliate. Our purpose is not to strike back. Our purpose is not to take action to correct all the ills in our society. Our purpose is to serve the Lord, to submit to His will, to do exactly what He has given us to do. If we do that, I'm convinced we can change the world. Not through retaliation and striking back, but through love, teaching, submission to the complete will of God. Not calling upon the forces of God to strike back for us. Simply submitting ourselves to His will. Doing what He would have us to do. Jesus then said to the chief priests and officers of the temple and elders who had come against Him, "Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me as you would against a robber? While I used to sit with you daily in the temple teaching, you did not lay hands on me. But this hour and the power of darkness are yours. But all this has taken place to fulfill the Scriptures of the prophets." And all the disciples left Him and fled. Even a young man following Him who was wearing nothing but a linen sheet over his naked body, and they seized him. But he pulled free of the sheet and escaped naked. Everyone ran. I think the main power in this statement of Jesus' approach to the chief priest is, "If I had not let you, you could not have me." You needed darkness to complete your deeds, not in the openness and brightness of day, but in the darkness of night and of the hour, and then left alone. So the Roman cohort and the commander and the officer of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, for he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was high priest that year. Now Caiaphas was the one who had advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. And I think it's important we stop and consider for just a moment these two men we're talking about, because John in his account refers to Annas as high priest. Yet Caiaphas is also referred to as high priest, and there was a reason for that. we go back and look through the history of the Jews and the very beginning of their nation, the laws that were given to God, to them from God regarding the priest said that the priest was to serve as long as he lived. It was a lifetime service. But under the rule of the Romans had taken upon themselves to appoint a particular one as the high priest. And that's how we end up with two high priests. Annas was the high priest of the Jews. And therefore, he was the first one that the Jews came to. Yet it was Caiaphas who would be interacting between the Jews and the Romans. He was the one recognized as high priest by the Romans. So there's the reason for the two men being mentioned and the Jews taking Jesus to Annas first. Annas actually had five sons and sons-in-law who were appointed as high priest by the Romans over the course of time. Caiaphas being the one at this particular time. But as we continue reading the high priest, and remember we're talking about Annas here, the high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered him, "I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews come together, and I spoke nothing in secret. Why do you question me? Question those who have heard what I spoke to them. They know what I said." When he had said this, one of the officers standing nearby struck Jesus, saying, "Is that the way you answer the high priest?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken wrongly, testify of the wrong. But if rightly, why do you strike me?" Certainly, sometimes when we study these passages like this, we put the focus on the striking and the response and such. But let's take note of the message that Jesus presents here. "My message has not been hidden, open and above board, spoken in the light as opposed to the deeds of the chief priests and scribes done in the night." And again, there's an example for us. We need to be willing to speak the message of God in the light, in the openness of the day. We need to go about proclaiming our submission and our devotion to the Lord all through our life. This wasn't about bringing someone who had been subversive in, who had been hiding what they were saying and bringing him in, trying to find out what he was teaching. This was bringing someone in who they knew exactly what he had been teaching. Jesus reprimands him for it. Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest in the eyes of the Romans. The political high priest, you might refer to him. And all the chief priests and elders and the scribes gathered together. Now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain testimony against Jesus to put him to death. And they were not finding any. For many were giving false testimony against him, but their testimony was not consistent. But later on, two came forward and said, "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple made with hands, and in 3 days I will build another made without hands.' Yet not even this, in this respect, was their testimony consistent." The high priest stood up and came forward and questioned Jesus, saying, "Do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you?" But Jesus kept silent and did not answer. Again, the high priest was questioning him and saying to him, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." Jesus said to him, "You have said it yourself, I am. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has blasphemed. What further need do we have of witnesses? Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. What do you think? How does it seem to you?" They all condemned him and answered, "He deserves death." Now the men who were holding Jesus in custody were mocking him and beating him, and they blindfolded him and were asking him, saying, "Prophesy, who is the one that hit you?" Then they spat in his face and beat him with their fist, and others slapped him and said, "Prophesy to us, you Christ. Who's the one that hit you?" And the officers received him with slaps in the face. I want us to consider for a moment that the things that were being done at this point were being done at night. It was not yet day. Yet they were trying Jesus for sedition, for blasphemy. They had no right to gather in the night. Their gatherings were to be in the day. They could not make a ruling in the night. Yet they were still trying Jesus, abusing Him. All of the testimony against Him that was brought was false testimony. It was inconsistent. Even when they got two men who could say pretty much the same thing, it was still inconsistent in what they said. This particular passage here, this section, emphasizes to us the innocence of Jesus of the charges that were placed against Him. That there was nothing that could be found that was wrong with how He conducted Himself or what He had taught. All things with which He was charged were false. They were seeking some way to destroy Him, and even doing it in the night. They were abusing Him, and He would be abused for the remainder of His life here on earth. From the point at which He was taken in bonds, He was abused. When it was day, the council of elders of the people assembled, both chief priests and scribes, and they led Him away to their council chamber, saying, "If you are the Christ, tell us." But He said to them, "If I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask a question, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God." And they all said, "Are you the Son of God then?" And He said to them, "Yes, I am." Then they said, "What further need do we have of testimony? For we have heard it ourselves from His own mouth." You might think, well, you're just repeating what you've already said. But understand, the accusations and the statements that had been made before were unofficial because they were made at night. And that's why we have repeated that when day came, they gathered in the council chamber for the purpose of making their accusations formal. Their minds were made up before they got there. They knew what they were going to do when they left with Judas to go to the Garden of Gethsemane to arrest Him. But now they had to formally gather because, as we continue reading, early in the morning, the chief priests and elders and scribes and the whole council held a consultation, and binding Jesus, they led Him from Caiaphas and delivered Him to Pilate, the governor, in the praetorium. And they themselves did not enter into the praetorium so that they would not be defiled, but might eat the Passover. They've done all they can do as Jews under the Roman rule. And so now they bring Him to the Roman governor of the area, Pilate. Bring Him to his palace, the praetorium. Because they are in the time of the Passover, they could not enter into the palace themselves. If so, they would become unclean, would not be able to partake of the Passover. And so they refrained from entering. So we have, as we continue looking at what's taking place, we have a discourse between Pilate and the scribes and elders on the outside, and a discourse between Pilate and Jesus on the inside. His accusers would not even come into the judging chambers, yet stayed outside to keep themselves clean. Pilate went out to them, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they answered him and said to him, "If this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you." Wait a minute. If we bring someone before the judge, the magistrate, the police today, and they ask, "What are you charging him with?" And we say, "Well, if he wasn't bad, I wouldn't have brought him." What response are we going to get? That's the response they gave to the governor of Rome over their region. So Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him according to your law." And the Jews said to him, "We are not permitted to put anyone to death." And this fulfilled the words of Jesus which he spoke, signifying by what death he was about to die. They began accusing him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation, forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." Notice, The charges that are placed before Pilate are different from the charges upon which they found him guilty. They found him guilty of blasphemy, of equating himself with God. But in order to accomplish their purposes, they had to convince the Roman government that something was wrong. And so they said he put himself in the place of Caesar. He's caused insurrection. He's making trouble. And he needs to be put to death. Pilate again entered into the praetorium and summoned Jesus and said to him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus now stood before the governor, and Pilate questioned him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" And Jesus answered, "Are you saying this of your own initiative, or did some others tell you about me?" Pilate answered, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm." Therefore, Pilate said to him, "Are you a king?" Jesus answered, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born. For this I have come into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" When he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and to the chief priests and the crowds. I found no guilt in him. Hearing the accusation placed against him and even the statements that Jesus made in regards to those questions, Pilate said, "There's nothing wrong with this man. He's done no wrong. He doesn't need to be here. Y'all need to disperse and let him go back home. There's nothing wrong that has been done." Yet the chief priest began to accuse him harshly, and while he was being accused by the chief priest and elders, he did not answer. And Pilate said to him, "Do you not answer? Do you not hear how many things they testify against you?" But Jesus made no further answer with regard to even a single charge. So Pilate, the governor, was quite amazed. But they kept on insisting, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching all over Judea, starting from Galilee, even as far as this place." And when Pilate heard, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. When he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. We'll take just a moment here to make note. Some of the timing of these things are hard to determine exactly which happened before the other. There's a time at which Jesus is inside the praetorium, and then another time it seems he's outside the praetorium. And it's a difficulty trying to determine when the coming and going may be because there's no specifics given. But in a general sense, these are the things that took place with Jesus. And Herod, being the ruler over the Galileans, Pilate saw as a way out. He's not from Jerusalem. He's from Galilee. So I'll send him to Herod, and he did. Now, Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he'd wanted to see him for a long time because he'd been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now, Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day. Pilate sought to lay the responsibility off upon another. Herod questioned Jesus, and there's not a lot said about what those questions were, the answers, except that Jesus did not answer. They mocked him, as had the soldiers already done, and sent him back to Pilate. And once again, Pilate summoned the chief priests and the rulers of the people and said to them, "You brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I find no guilt in this man regarding the charges which you make against him, nor has Herod, for he sent him back to us. And behold, nothing deserving of death has been done by him. Therefore, I will punish him and release him." This man's done nothing wrong. I'm going to let him go. Herod couldn't find anything. I can't find anything. You can't tell me anything. I'm going to let him go. We have a small explanatory interlude inserted here that gives us some explanation about the coming events. At the feast, the governor was accustomed, or some of the Gospels say obliged, to release for the people any one prisoner whom they wanted. At that time, they were holding a notorious prisoner called Barabbas, a robber, in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the insurrection. And the crowd went up and began asking him to do as he'd been accustomed to do for them. Pilate answered, saying, "Do you want me to release for you Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ, the King of the Jews?" For he was aware that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowds to ask for Barabbas and to put Jesus to death. They cried out all together, saying, "Away with this man and release for us Barabbas." When I read the choice that Pilate gave to the people, it sounds to me like a parents giving a choice to a child and trying to influence that child's decision. He says, "Do you want me to release to you Barabbas or Jesus, the King of the Jews, the Messiah, the Christ?" And plays on that, like, do you want hamburgers for supper or do you want macaroni and cheese? He gave them a choice, tried to influence that choice. And it's important that we note that it was because of the influence of the chief priests and scribes that the people chose Barabbas. Certainly it was the people that cried out, "Away with this man and release Barabbas," but it was the urging of their leaders that pointed them to do this. That's important for us to note now, because later, when the gospel is presented, there are literally thousands who hear of Christ, the crucifixion, and obey. When they were convicted of what they had done in crucifying him. Oftentimes we generalize and say the Jews rejected Jesus. We need to understand that it was the urging of the Jewish leaders that brought about that rejection. Another little informational piece inserted here. While he was sitting at the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message saying, "Have nothing to do with this righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." And Pilate, wanting to release Jesus, addressed them again. "What will I do with him who you call the King of the Jews, Jesus, who is the Christ?" And they shouted back, "Crucify him." Pilate said to them a third time, "Why? What evil has he done? I found in him no guilt demanding death, therefore I will punish him and release him." But they were insistent and with loud voices shouted all the more, "Crucify him." And their voices began to prevail. Then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. And again he was abused. The soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the palace and called together the whole Roman cohort around him. They stripped him, dressed him in purple, put on a scarlet robe. After twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And they knelt down before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they gave him slaps to the face, and they kept beating his head with a reed and spitting on him and kneeling and bowing before him. Pilate came out again and said to them, "Behold, I'm bringing him out to you so that you may know that I find no guilt in him." And Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify, crucify." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." And the Jews answered, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid, and entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" Jesus gave no answer. So Pilate said to him, "Do you not speak to me? Do you not know that I have the authority to release you and I have the authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me to you has the greater sin." As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar." Therefore, when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at the place called the Pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation for the Passover, and about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." So they cried out, "Away with him, away with him, crucify him." Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." When Pilate saw that he was accomplishing nothing, but rather a riot was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. See to that yourselves." And all the people said, "His blood shall be on us and on our children." Wishing to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas for them, who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, but he delivered Jesus to their will to be crucified. After they had mocked him, they took the purple robe off him and put his own garments on him. They took Jesus, therefore, and went out bearing his own cross to the place called the place of a skull, which is in Hebrew, Golgotha, to crucify him. And as they were coming out, they pressed into service a passerby from the country, Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus, and placed him on the cross to carry behind Jesus. They tried to give him wine to drink mixed with myrrh or gall, but after tasting it, he was unwilling to drink. And following him was a large crowd of people and of women who were mourning and lamenting him. But Jesus, on the way to crucify, turned to them and said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Blessed are those who are barren, and wombs that never bore, and breasts that never nursed,' to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry?" Two others also were criminals, were being led away to be put to death with him. There they crucified him with two other men, one on either side, and Jesus in between. But Jesus was saying, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing." And it was the third hour when they crucified him. Even on his way to the cross, Jesus expressed concern for others more than for himself, just like his death was going to be for others rather than for self. We know the rest of the story. Pilate wrote, "King of the Jews," on a sign above him. The scribes and priests protested, "You need to tell him that he said he was King of the Jews." And Pilate said, "What I've written, I've written." Wrote it in three different languages so everyone could read it. Though Pilate was convinced, evidently, at least to some degree, that Jesus should not be crucified, he allowed him to be. Though he washed his hands and said he was cleansed of the matter, he interacted with and took part in the crucifixion. The soldiers took the garments, parted them into four parts. They took the tunic and they cast lots so that it would not be torn because it was all one piece. And they sat down and they watched. All these things according to the descriptions The people looking on and the rulers sneered at Jesus. He saved others. Let him save himself if this is the Christ of God. He's chosen one. The soldiers mocked him, offered him wine. If you're king of the Jews, save yourself. Those passing by, if you who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're the Son of God, come down from the cross. Even the crooks mocked him. Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and save us. He saved others, the chief priest said. He cannot save himself. He's king of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross so that we may see and believe. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he delights in him. For he said, I'm the Son of God. Of course, the story of the other robber who rebuked the one who mocked Jesus. We're here for a purpose. We've done wrong. He's here having done no wrong. In the pity of Christ, the concern, telling that one, you will be with me in paradise, after being asked to be remembered. Standing by the cross of Jesus was his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas and Mary Magdalene. When he saw his mother the disciple whom he loved, John, standing by, he said to his mother, Woman, behold your son. To the disciple, behold your mother. From that hour, the disciple took her into his own household. Again, an expression of his concern for others, even as he was suffering on the cross. And now about the sixth hour, darkness fell over the land until the ninth hour, because the sun was obscured. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me? Some of those standing there, when they heard it, began to say, he's calling for Elijah. And after this, Jesus, knowing that all things had already been accomplished to fulfill Scripture, said, I'm thirsty. There was a jar of sour wine standing there, so they put a sponge full of sour wine upon a branch of hyssop and brought it to him, up to his mouth. But the rest of them said, let us see whether Elijah will come and save him. Therefore, when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, it is finished. And he cried out with a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Having said this, he bowed and gave up his spirit. The story of Jesus, his trial, the mockeries, and his death on the cross is a story that should be ingrained within our hearts. It is a story of hatred, of love, of spite, of concern. It is a story of salvation and destruction. It is a story that seemingly ends with defeat. But as we continue reading, we find the very next day, that evening buried, left in the grave, and on the very first day of the coming week, early in the morning, Jesus rose. He was gone from the grave when they came to continue the burial process. They were amazed, even though they'd been taught. They were amazed. They were surprised. They went and told the others, and they were there first, and the others, Peter and John in particular, mentioning, go running to the grave, and still they're caught by surprise that he's not there. They see him several times during that time frame, and then we have in the book of Acts in the first chapter, not only did Jesus rise from the grave, but he ascended to be with the Father and stood upon his right hand under the reign throughout all time until all things were put under his feet. The story of the crucifixion needs to be embedded in our hearts. It needs to be the main focus of what we think on each and every day. For it is that sacrifice of Christ, we remember it on the first day in this memorial, but it is that sacrifice of Christ that should motivate us to serve the Lord each and every day of our lives. I hope you'll take some time to go back and read through those four accounts of the trial, the arrest, and crucifixion, and the raising, and the ascension. Maybe even take the time and trouble that it would be to combine those accounts together to help you
fill your mind with all the details that you can. And that you dwell on it daily. Because it will be a powerful incentive to be obedient to the will of the Lord. It is that sacrifice that allows us to be children. It is that sacrifice that gives us the means by which we can approach God and ask for forgiveness. Through the death, burial, and resurrection of the Savior, we've been saved from our sins by obedience to His gospel. As Paul said in the book of Romans, and again alluded to Colossians, we were buried with Him in baptism, and we rise in a new life because He died, was buried, and rose. And what powerful suffering He endured before that death for you and for me. Are you still as devoted to the Lord today as you were the day you obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ and became a child of God? If not, why not? Shouldn't you be even more devoted today than you were then? Motivate yourself to the story of the cross and the sacrifice of Jesus. And if you find in your heart this morning that there's something amiss in your life that needs to be corrected, and we can assist you by praying to God on your behalf, here you come. If you desire to know all, we stand in the center for the prayer.